curious about the impulse. Normally, writers who are more fascinated with words than stories are poets. Mm-hmm. And that's found less frequently in fiction. How did you come to fiction having that impulse toward words rather than toward stories?
Well, one reason was that I couldn't write poetry. I tried. Oh, just dreadful stuff. I mean, dreadful by that surpasses ordinary dreadful. And I found that I needed a much more expansive developmental sense for the language, that my sense of form was not poetic but rhetorical, and the forms of speech, conversation possibly, but speech making and rhetoric in the old sense, were much more natural to me than the kinds of forms that poets usually employ, which have quick closures. And rhetorical forms tend to open out much more expansively. And so my tendency, I ultimately discovered, was to work in structures which are basically rhetorical, not narrative, but not poetic. But it took a while of stumbling around, because I couldn't write poetry, and I thought, well, I'll see if I can write fiction. But then I thought, well, it means narrative. Then I happily learned that it doesn't mean narrative necessarily. But it's true that it's something in between. It has to do with the fact that I lecture a lot, that I have to hear my prose. It's very much in the voice, and therefore those forms are natural to it.
I wonder about, too, using a form such as the long novel with your interest. For example, I know that you're a great fan of Samuel Beckett, and I wonder if you sometimes feel drawn to minimalism and to doing such shortened, you know, finding the word and having that be it.
I admire it enormously, but I have a Baroque imagination, a personal imagination. I love Beckett, and I love a lot of other writers who are, in a sense, minimalists in this modernist tradition. And I've learned a great deal from them. But I fundamentally have an imagination which is convoluted and expansive and loves excess. My own sense is to get the language rolling, you know, and then let it go. Whereas, of course, for Beckett, his whole approach is, of course, to break it up and not allow that kind of extended sweep. It's just fragments. It's very wonderful stuff, but I've never been able to work really in that mode successfully.
So there are different genres within the genre.
Oh yes, I'll say. Sure. No, one of the problems of a writer is to find what kind of writer you really are, and while you can try to strengthen the weaknesses you may have, the areas which you're not very good in, you have to find your mode, and then you go with it.
In another interview, you said that what you were trying to do with the tunnel was create a sort of climate of evil with an evil protagonist who is yet sympathetic.
That's right. Yes, one of the problems of the book is to create a character who has a lot of qualities, which I think most people would find reprehensible, and properly so, I think. But to put them in a mode which is by no means obviously that way, make them at times in the book sympathetic. Certainly he's got to be sensitive, intelligent, and so on. One of the reasons for that is that part of my subject matter is what I call fascism of the heart. And that phenomenon has puzzled people because very cultivated people have sometimes been very serious and ferocious fascists.
Ezra Pound.
In Germany, there were conductors who, Furt Wangler, there's people like Heidegger, So you've got a case where culture does not, a high degree of sensitivity even in certain respects, does not guarantee or protect you from this kind of disease.
Are you talking about what Robert Stone calls the beauty of the mushroom cloud, or are you talking about this as a...
No, I'm talking I'm talking about a state and frame of mind which leads to this kind, not the beauty...
Aesthetic,
yeah,
evil.
Yeah, it's not what Patton looks out on the battlefield and finds aesthetic interest, but rather the moral convolutions and how... extremely sensitive people can nevertheless be cruel, insensitive, etc. How it is that people who possess high culture are not thereby made in other ways civilized. And I find that a fascinating subject. It's connected up, of course, with one of my favorite subjects, that is the separation of morality and aesthetics. I'm concerned with that. I'm also concerned to see to what degree, though it's been done enough by other people, to what degree you can take attitudes, values, and by render them in a as fine a language as you can give to them. One of the problems of our understanding the kind of thing you got in the Nazi situation is how this can be an all appealing, and we don't give it its finest voice. And I want to see if I can speak not for the victims, but for the villains, and see what happens. Recognizing, I hope, that they are villains. But from their point of view, there's a... Otherwise, we don't really confront the enemy. I mean, we have made some movie Nazi, which we've knocked over, you know. That's not the real thing. It's much more complicated and difficult. So that's one of the exploratory problems that I have. You know.